This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
There's sports betting, and then there's Circa Las Vegas, an adults-only sports watching nirvana. Now you can watch up to 19 games at the world's largest sports book on a 78-million-pixel, three-story mega screen. Plus, it's always spectator season at America's largest pool amphitheater, Stadium Swim. Stadium Swim is open 365 days a year and features all sports on an epic 143-foot screen. Book your reservation at CircaLasVegas.com. Circa Las Vegas, this is sports the way it should be.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
America's favorite place to watch football is Stadium Swim, located at Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas. Catch all the biggest games at a viewing experience built for sports fans. Chill in one of their six pools on three different levels for a perfect view of their massive screen. Plenty of seating options from cozy daybeds to private, temperature-controlled cabanas. Stadium Swim. Book your spot today at CircaLasVegas.com.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet, and the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
He owns and operates the Pack-A-Day podcast that airs 365 days a year with over 12 million views on YouTube. A new adventure begins. It's time for the Pack-A-Day radio show with Andy Herman on 1250 AM and 105.7 FM The Fan, powered by the Potawatomi Sportsbook and on the free Odyssey app.
FM The Fan Studios, powered by the Potawatomi Sportsbook. Today, we are going to be joined by the great Paul Brettel, Packers beat writer for ESPN Lacrosse. He'll be joining us on 820 today, so make sure to stick around for that.
Paul's the absolute best. If you guys haven't had the opportunity to listen to Paul yet, you're going to want to make sure that you check out that that interview today, because he is awesome and he does a phenomenal job covering the Packers. Also, would love to hear from you. You can join on the Nicolay Law fan line, 414-677-1250. So make sure to get those phone calls in. It is a victory Thursday of sorts. The Packers obviously won earlier in the week, but your Milwaukee Bucks won last night as well. Great to see Dame and Giannis cooking in that one. The new additions looked really good, so great to see the Bucks get a win. I am sure they are going to do a much better job of covering that game today on the Mason Crosby show, so make sure to stick around for that as well. Of course, this is the Pack-A-Day radio show, so we're going to be focusing in on the Green Bay Packers per usual, but we're going to start with a former New York Jets head coach today, and that, of course, is Robert Saleh. Robert Saleh fired in New York. The whole Aaron Rodgers situation and, of apparently, and of course, Aaron had nothing to do with it and really liked Robert Saleh and was offended by the fact that people sort of put the firing on Aaron. But here we are, Robert Saleh, a free agent coach, if you will. When he was fired, there was the immediate questions of, all right, would Matt LaFleur consider bringing Robert Saleh in? There was a lot of people in San Francisco that were hoping that Robert Saleh would go back there in some sort of advisement role or consultant role. And when it initially happened, the prevailing thought in the report was that Robert Saleh was going to take the rest of the season off and that he was going to focus on, you know, getting ready for his next coaching endeavor, whether that be as a head coach next year, as a defensive coordinator. He will be a well sought after defensive coordinator in 2025. If he wants to be a head coach, obviously he's going to have to kind of go through all the interview process and we'll see if he gets those interviews. But all the reports indicated he would not be joining any team for the remainder of this year and instead would be focusing on what would happen in 2025. Then all of a sudden yesterday, we start getting the images from the Packers beat writers out of practice of Robert Saleh on the sidelines of, you know, Packers practice. And even then, you know, we've seen a lot of different people, a lot of different coaches, you know, Peyton Manning's and, you know, who knows, like just a ton of different people that they invite as guests to their practices. We saw it all during training camp. Happens all the time. Robert Saleh and Matt LaFleur, as you know, are best friends, stood up in, I believe it was Robert Saleh who stood up in Matt LaFleur's wedding. Like, they are very, very close. So even as this was, you know, sort of breaking news yesterday, it still sort of felt like, all right, is this just him visiting for a day? Or is this just, you know, him hanging with LaFleur and maybe picking his brain for a day, but there's not going to be much about this. And we're going to get to the press conference and Matt's going to say, yep, just came in and was visiting for the day. And of course, everyone in Packers Nation was hoping, like, you know, all right, is he going to come in? Is he going to consult? Is he get what, like, how is he going to join this team in some capacity? And then finally, we got the confirmation. Actually, Andrew Brandt had tweeted it earlier that he would be advising Green Bay, that he had heard it earlier last week, didn't want to be the breaking news guy. And then we finally got to the press conference, and Matt LaFleur said that Robert Saleh will join the Packers in a, quote, fluid role, and he will be joining on the offensive side of the ball. Quote, I think he's got an elite defensive mind. That's why I want him on the offensive side so he can help us attack. Help us attack the defenses, which makes a lot of sense. We'll get into that more in just a moment. Jordan Love was asked about the impressions of Robert Saleh signing with the Packers, and he said, quote, having a defensive mind, talking offense and helping with things, he might be able to see some of our scheme stuff, things the defense might be looking for. It helps. And Matt LaFleur also emphasized, quote, I think half in our defense and the staff are doing a great or have a great thing going right now, and wanted to sort of emphasize that Robert Saleh will not be influencing the defensive side of the ball. And all of this makes a ton of sense. So when Saleh initially became available, when he was fired by the Jets, this is a question that was asked of, like, all right, if they bring in Robert Saleh and Jeff Hafley's here as a brand new defensive coordinator, right? If that ends up happening, how do you make it so that Jeff Hafley isn't kind of constantly looking over his shoulder and is comfortable with this elite defensive mind all of a sudden in the building? That's Matt LaFleur's best friend. Like, you would have to feel like a little extra pressure, or like, oh my goodness, am I just going to get undercut and what I'm doing is no longer going to have like final say? That would be sort of a worst case scenario if you're Jeff Hafley, right? Now, Jeff Hafley and Robert Saleh also have a relationship. They know each other. They've coached together in the past. So that is a key to this as well. But one of the things that I immediately thought of when he became available was the Aubrey Pleasant situation from a couple years ago. Aubrey Pleasant was the defensive coordinator for the Lions, or defensive backs coach, one of the two. And he was let go by Detroit. And Green Bay immediately picked him up. And there was thoughts of, all right, would this be a potential replacement for Joe Barry? Or, you know, would he help Joe Barry on the defensive side of the ball? And no, it was not. It was to help Matt LaFleur on the offensive side. And it's the same thing now with Robert Saleh. And it was very clear that Matt wanted to make this, you know, impression known that, hey, this is not some sort of, you know, we're bringing in this guy because Jeff's not doing a good job, or Jeff's going to have to look over his shoulder, which I do believe is really important. You want Jeff Hafley to have autonomy, that defense. He is doing a phenomenal job right now. We saw him just come off his best game against Houston. You don't want him to feel any sort of way, or like he's got to double check things with Matt or Robert. Like, he's got to go and do what you hired him to do. You hired him to be the guy as defensive coordinator and gave him that autonomy. I think the worst thing you could do 7 games into the season is all of a sudden cut his legs out from him, and all of a sudden sudden have people second guessing, or like, can you imagine if like all of a sudden the defensive coaches who are normally getting their, you know, their game plan and their strategy from Jeff Hafley are now also like discussing with Robert Saleh to the side? Like, it just ends up, you know, creating a situation that's not ideal for anyone. So I thought Matt handled this extremely well. And then from an offensive side of the ball, it makes all the sense in the world. Listen, Matt is one of the great offensive minds in all of football. His offense and how he designs plays and puts his playbook together, it's second to none right now. And we see him ahead of the opposing defensive coordinator almost every single week. But not always. In fact, I would argue this past week that DeMeco Ryans was maybe a quarter to half step ahead of Matt for a good chunk of the day. And when you're able to bring in somebody like Robert Saleh and let him look at what your offensive game plan is. So let's think about this logically, right? Imagine you're Matt LaFleur and you go to Robert Saleh and you say, all right, we're facing Jacksonville this week. I want you to go look at Jacksonville's defense and I want you to put a game plan together of what you would do watching our tape and putting a full game plan together. If you were Jacksonville, how you would attack our offense. Look at where you find our weaknesses. Look at where you find our tendencies and put that game plan together and attack us in brutal fashion. And I want to know, like, you know, I could have you out for, like, since he's here this week, he's not going to be here always, but like, I want you running the scout team defense. I want you running it exactly how you would attack it if you were Jacksonville with their talent. And all of a sudden, he puts that game plan together and he looks at the film and says, this is where I would attack you. This is where I'm coming with blitzes. This is how I'm going to make sure that I'm going to get you into some disadvantageous looks. And now Matt LaFleur has a cheat sheet, which is probably better than anything Jacksonville's even going to get, you know, put together, because Robert Saleh is that good of a defensive mind of exactly how an opposing defense with the specific skills that the Jacksonville Jaguars have and the specific players, how they would attack Matt LaFleur's offense. And you might say, well, what, you know, couldn't just Jeff Hafley have done that? Well, no, Jeff Hafley has to be focused on getting ready for Jacksonville's offense and making sure that he is ready for all the calls that he needs to make, his play sheet's good to go, and putting that full game plan together for how to attack Jacksonville and Trevor Lawrence and Tank Bigsby and that entire Jacksonville offense. So that's his job description. But now you come in with, again, a Robert Saleh and let him have this autonomy of putting together basically a game plan for how to stop Green Bay's offense. Not to mention, like, just take the Jacksonville side of things away from it, right? Just looking at Green Bay's offense with a outside view and saying, hey, here's what you're doing well. Here's what you're doing wrong. Here are the weaknesses. Here are the strengths. And you can do a whole SWOT analysis if you want. And just having somebody, again, with that, you know, football acumen, being able to break down everything, that is going to have a massive impact on the offense and how they're going to be able to go in and prepare for games. Like, you have your advanced scouts of people that are looking forward to the next game and things like that. That's great. And every team has those, but there are few that are looking at it the way that Robert Saleh is looking at it. And just for Matt too, I'm sure having somebody with the coaching experience, both defensively and just as a head coach, that he can sort of lean on and say, hey, I'm thinking about this for this game. What do you think about it? And I know he has Rich Bisaccia as an assistant head coach, and Bisaccia has been an interim head coach in the past. And again, you don't want to, you know, go around some of those roles that already exist, but it's just another resource for Matt and the coaching staff to have at their disposal. And to me, that is massive. Now, from a defensive side, if you're Jeff Hafley, I get, you know, this is a huge vote of confidence, and it's exactly what you wanted to hear, right? You don't want to hear like, yes, Robert's going to be the assistant defensive coordinator, or he's going to be helping Jeff with day-to-day. Like, it just is a little bit, you know, probably too soon for something like that. You just have to give Jeff the confidence and the autonomy to do things the way that he wants to do them. But if I'm Jeff Hafley, I love the fact that Matt did that, but I'm also probably going to Matt and say like, hey, it's great that you want him on the offensive side, but do you mind if I throw some things past Robert Saleh, this unbelievable defensive mind as well? Because I would like to pick his brain every once in a while. And again, that relationship already exists between Robert Saleh and Jeff Hafley. And I totally get, again, the separation to begin with. But you would think at some point that Jeff Hafley is also going to be able to lean on Robert Saleh and ask him questions and go to him for advice of what he would do in a specific situation. And again, just having that IQ and knowledge in the building, or even if he's working remotely for a good chunk of the time, that you can dial that up and say, hey, this is a play that we're thinking of running against this specific offense, and we think we can catch him. What would you do in this situation or scenario? Again, it is just more knowledge in the building that is available at 1265 for anyone that needs it. I think this is huge for Green Bay. and how they're going to be able to go about this and, again, better put together game plans, understand their weaknesses better, and just have somebody that has done it before on both the defensive side and as a head coach to lean on. And from if you look at it from Robert Saleh's standpoint as well, this makes all the sense in the world for him. First of all, like, this is a vacation for Robert Saleh. Like, going from head coach of the Jets, and don't get me wrong, I have no doubt that Robert Saleh would very much prefer to still be the head coach of the Jets. Like, there's no question about that. But if, you know, once you're fired, going to Green Bay, working with one of the best young and up-and-coming teams in football, with one of the brightest offensive minds as his consultant, and, oh, by the way, it's his best friend as well, like, that has to just be an absolute dream for Robert Saleh. Like, what a better way to spend your time than seeing how this great Packers organization operates, just to get kind of, you know, notes that he can go into his next job interview, whether that's as a head coach or a defensive coordinator. And working with Matt LaFleur is a pretty good resume builder right now. Like, Matt's doing a phenomenal job and has, you know, I think eyes on him around the league for the job that he is doing with the Green Bay Packers. So getting to work with Matt LaFleur only is going to help Robert Saleh. And then again, getting to work with his best friend, going to work with this really good team, not having any pressure on him whatsoever, where he can just go and watch film and talk ball. I mean, when Jeff Hafley came over to Green Bay, he talked about how, you know, when he, and it was a little bit different in college, right? Because the college game is changing and you have to focus on all the minutia of the transfer portal and the NIL and all of that sort of stuff. That was more of, I think, where Hafley was, you know, not as much of a fan of the job description anymore in college. But he talked about how he loves defense. And he loves getting into the nitty-gritty and putting defensive game plans together. And he missed that as a head coach at Boston College. And he was so excited to get back and just doing the defensive coordinator thing and working on the defensive side of the ball and maybe not having to do all the other stuff that came with being a head coach. And now for Robert Saleh, just getting to come in and just watch film and meet with his best friend and talk ball. Like, again, this is going to feel like a vacation for him. So I think from a personal standpoint, he's probably loving it. From a professional standpoint, it's a great resume builder and just kind of keeps him busy and getting new ideas while he's waiting for that next opportunity. And obviously from a Green Bay standpoint, it makes all the sense in the world. And Green Bay is not lucky, but it's a great, you know, situation that he didn't go to a San Francisco or something like that, that he is in Green Bay and helping out. So this is a win all the way around for Robert Saleh, for the Green Bay Packers, and for everyone involved. And I think it is going to legitimately help Green Bay's offense. And I bet at some point, too, it does help their defense, even if they want to kind of keep that separated to begin with. Now, the last thing I'll say is they did mention, or Matt did mention, that this is a fluid situation. It doesn't seem like they have a set contract for the remainder of the year or any, you know, any sort of set timeline for this. Could be that Robert helps out this week and, you know, Green Bay and Robert kind of get what they need out of it, and then that's it. And that's it. It's done with. It could be that something that he's on the staff and available for consulting for the remainder of the year. That is the part that remains fluid. We don't exactly know at this point. I think it's probably a little bit of a work in progress. It's probably one of those things where, and we heard this from Matt, as soon as Robert was like, oh, we said, hey, take your time. But if you ever want anything or, you know, you want to come help us, we're here for you. And eventually at some point, Robert's like, all right, let's do it. And you probably figure out the details later, right? So you get him on a plane to Green Bay. You say, yep, let's come in. We'll figure out your role and exactly what you want. We want you to do. And you kind of figure that out as time goes on and how to kind of best utilize his talent. So right now it's fluid. Again, it could be a short-term thing, but even if it's a week, if it's 2 weeks, if it's a month, whatever it ends up being, it will have an impact on this team. And if he's focused on the offensive side, that's great. And it will definitely help Matt LaFleur, Jordan Love, and the entirety of this offense get prepared week in and week out for as long as he is helping Green Bay. All right, we had a couple of transactions and some injury report updates as well. So let's start with the injury report. We had a handful of Packers that did not practice, four to be exact. Corey Ballantyne did not practice with an ankle injury. Elgton Jenkins did not practice with a glute injury. Josh Myers didn't practice with, did not practice with a wrist injury. And then Quay Walker did not practice with a concussion injury. So Ballantyne ankle, Jenkins glute, Myers wrist, and Quay Walker with a concussion. There was one player that returned to practice. That was Devontae Wyatt. He was listed as limited. Now, Devontae Wyatt did say in the locker room as well that he should be good to go this week. So that would be a huge sign for this defense that, especially on the interior, hasn't exactly been generating a ton of pressure. There's been a lot of pressure with blitzes and being able to bring linebackers from the inside, but just winning one-on-ones on the interior hasn't been happening a ton. So getting Devontae Wyatt back could be a really nice boon for this Packers interior defensive line. Other players who were limited included Jaire Alexander, Kenny Clark, Keyshawn Nixon, Jaden Reed, and Christian Watson, and Colby Wooden was listed as a full participant. One other player that was still not practicing was Marshawn Lloyd. He remains on injured reserve. Remember, they could open his 21-day window anytime that they want to, but they have not done so yet, and at the time being, he is still not practicing in any capacity. So if anyone was hoping that this could be the week that Marshawn Lloyd comes back, doesn't look like it. They could still activate him and open his practice window if they want to today or tomorrow. But as of now, it doesn't look like there's any real chance that he would play this upcoming week. So he remains on IR for the time being. As I mentioned, there was one transaction. They released Jonathan Ford, who they just brought back the other day, and then they brought back Matt Orzech. So if you remember, just a couple days ago, they released Matt Orzech to bring Jonathan Ford back from injured reserve to the active roster. And the intention was to re-sign Matt Orzech back to still be the long snapper this week. This was all procedural. It makes all the sense in the world. So there's a little known rule that if you release of injured reserve, there is a time period where the team that released them off of IR cannot sign him back with the team in any capacity. So if Green Bay was not going to activate him off of IR, he would have stayed on injured reserve for the year, except he's healthy to go. So you'd have to release him off of IR so he's free to sign anywhere else. And if Green Bay wanted him back, they would have had to, you know, see to that waiting period and wait for him to come back. Or wait for him to hopefully not sign with another team so they could get him back, which wasn't going to happen because Jonathan Ford and his agent are immediately going to start shopping him around to other teams so he can start earning that paycheck sooner rather than later. This is how they lost Lou Nichols, their seventh round draft pick a couple years ago. They had to release him off of IR, couldn't bring him back to the practice squad, and he ends up signing with another practice squad before he could sign with Green Bay. Same thing happened with Tyler Goodson, the running back who ended up with Indianapolis's practice squad because they had to release him off of IR. So if they would have done that, they would have lost Jonathan Ford entirely. By doing it this way and releasing Matt Orzech for a day, knowing that nobody was going to pick him up and he wasn't going to go anywhere, they could put Jonathan Ford on the active roster. And then after he's on the active roster, they could release him, which again they did yesterday, bring back Matt Orzech. Jonathan Ford will have to clear waivers today. I don't foresee anyone claiming Jonathan Ford. And assuming that that doesn't happen, assuming that he does not get claimed, then Jonathan Ford will be able to immediately be put on the Packers practice squad and they don't lose him. Now, do I think this is a major story or that, you know, Brian Gutekunst would have lost any sleep had they lost Jonathan Ford? No, probably not. Probably would not have been a major issue. But you've put a seventh round pick in 3 years into developing this guy. And if you can keep him around, and like he's probably like the 54th or 55th guy on their roster, right? Like he basically made the team out of training camp a year ago, but then some of the roster gymnastics happened and they had to let him go and bring him back to the practice squad. Like he's right there. So if you can keep him around and add him as an extra depth piece on the practice squad, you would certainly prefer it this way. And this is just a great way for Brian to manipulate the system a little bit and allow for them to get him back on the team without having to subject him to that time period where Green Bay could not bring him back. So great job by Goody and company, just making sure that they can keep all of their players. All right, reminder that if you cannot catch us on the radio, you can listen online at thefanmilwaukee.com or download and listen on the Odyssey app. Make sure to follow us on Facebook and Twitter at thefanmilwaukee. We are going to be right back with the great Paul Bredel from ESPN Lacrosse. This is the Packaday Radio Show live from the 1250 AM and 105.7 FM The Fan Studios, powered by the Pottawatomie Sportsbook. FM The Fan Studios, powered by the Pottawatomie Sportsbook. Reminder that the Mason Crosby Show with Mitch Nellis is coming up next from 9 to 11. You're not going to want to miss that. And comedian Sebastian Maniscalco, It Ain't Right Tour, comes to Pfizer Forum on November 6th. Your chance to win tickets today by going to thefanmilwaukee.com. So make sure to get over there and enter for a chance to win. Now, we are joined by Paul Bredel of ESPN Lacrosse, Packers beat writer. You can find him on Twitter at Paul_Bredel. Paul, how the heck are you, my friend?
I'm excellent, Andy. Happy to be talking Packers with you. Thanks for having me.
Yes, I know we get to chat every single week on Pack a Day, but this is a little extra special. Super excited to have you on. So thanks so much for joining us. We just talked and spent the majority of the first hour talking about Robert Saleh and how he could potentially help Green Bay. Matt talked about this being a potential fluid role. I want to start by asking you, how could you see this relationship between the Packers in Jeff Hafley, Matt LaFleur, and Robert Saleh kind of working out moving forward?
Yeah, I mean, I think it can be very, very valuable, right? You're bringing in an outside perspective to essentially, to a degree, pick apart your offensive game plan each week. Matt LaFleur, or what I envision, you know, what this process looks like. Matt LaFleur, they're playing the Jaguars this week, puts together his initial game plan on, all right, based on what the Jaguars do, here's how we're going to attack them. And then you have Saleh, as we all know, an accomplished defensive coordinator, and even though things in New York didn't work out, had some very good defenses there. You have Saleh bringing, again, an outside defensive mind to then take a look at that Matt LaFleur game plan and go, all right, if you're going to come at me with this, here's how I would attack it. And in the grand scheme of the NFL, or in the grand scheme of Matt LaFleur's game plan each week, in theory, that should make it more well-rounded, more soundproof, right? Because you're going to have a better understanding of how the opponent is going to attack what you're throwing at them. And I think this is also going to be a very, very, very behind the scenes type role. You know, I don't have any expectations that there's going to be offensive meetings and Robert Saleh is going to be up in front of the room talking to the players and getting everyone ready for the week. Like I said, I think this is going to be Matt LaFleur puts together his thoughts, his initial plans to attack the opponent that week, and then Robert Saleh is going to provide his perspective as well. And LaFleur even said, Saleh is taking off, I think, today on Thursday, leaving Green Bay to go back and be with his family. So very fluid, but anytime you can get another good offensive or defensive mind eyes on your coaching staff looking at your game plan each week, you know, it feels like something that would make a lot of sense.
Yeah, I think so too. It feels like just an additional shoulder for Matt LaFleur to lean on and an extra pair of eyes that are super experienced and super smart that he can kind of go to with any question, any game plan situation. And, you know, they have their advanced scouts already kind of looking at opponents ahead. But, man, if you can have Robert Saleh look at some of that stuff and find some of those holes and weaknesses and maybe your game plan, I think it's just going to make Green Bay stronger. Now, one of the interesting things is, of course, he is going to be helping more on the offensive side, not helping on the defensive side. I think, obviously, you want to give Jeff Hafley that autonomy and make sure that he can continue to run that defense. But I know one of the things that you looked at and wrote about on ESPN Lacrosse was Jeff Hafley's defense and how it's still evolving. As you kind of watch this Jeff Hafley defense evolve before our eyes, what are you seeing, and, you know, kind of where can this defense still kind of go from here?
Yeah, it feels like every week we're seeing a different version of this defense. And last Thursday when Hafley was speaking with us, you know, one of the things that he mentioned is, you know, he doesn't just have the playbook, hand it out to the players, go through it with everyone, say, all right, there it is, we know it, now let's go do it. This is a ever-evolving playbook that changes based on numerous variables. What does the opponent do? How are they going to attack us? How should we attack them? What players do we have? And where I think Jeff Hafley has really separated himself in terms of just this fast start and this ascending defense that we're seeing is, you know, the old saying, it's X's and O's and Jimmy's and Joe's. Jeff Hafley is very, very much about the players. He understands what his players do well. He understands the goals that his players want to accomplish. And that helps him put them in a position where they can be successful, where he knows how to utilize their strengths to the best of their ability. So they're out there playing fast. So they're out there playing physical. I remember early on in training camp, one of the Packers defenders said that during OTAs and the mini camp portion of the offseason, that during practice, you know, Jeff Hafley almost felt like more of an observer. And that was his way of just trying to get that initial understanding of, all right, what do each of these players do really well, and how can I utilize those strengths within his defense? And then you couple that with what is a very deep unit, a very versatile unit as well, number of guys who can fill a number of different roles. And this becomes a really, really challenging Packers defense to game plan for. One, just from Hafley's ability to roll out a new game plan each week to keep the offense off balance. But two, you don't necessarily know where these players are going to be lined up. Or even if you see where they're lined up, they might head to a completely different part of the field once the ball is snapped. So we hear about the illusion of complexity on the offensive side of the ball with Matt LaFleur, but it really feels like we're seeing that on the defensive side of things right now, and it's keeping offenses off balance. We've seen it the last 2 weeks. Kyler Murray, C.J. Stroud, I mean, they have had trouble in the passing game against this Packers defense, and a lot of it is the Hafley's ability to put the game plan together, to disguise blitzes, to disguise coverages. And equally as important is the marrying of those two aspects together. the defense up front, the linebackers, the secondary are all playing in unison. And last thing I'll say about Hafley and just the job that he's done up to this point is one other thing that he said over the summer has stuck with me throughout all of this is, you know, I can draw up the best blitz, you know, on paper, but if it can't be executed on at a high level, it doesn't matter. And again, that goes back to understanding your players, drawing up digestible game plans for them each week. So when they're out on the field, there's not thinking, right? It's just reacting. You know what your responsibility is. You know what the player next to you's responsibility is. And you're just reading, you're reacting, and you're going to the football.
Yeah, I love that so much. One of my favorite things when they hired Jeff Hafley is it almost felt like they found a Matt LaFleur of the defensive side that was going to be super adaptable, that was going to have specific game plans for players that, like you said, were digestible each week, that allowed this team to play fast, physical football, attacking football. I just thought last year, and really in the kind of Joe Barry era, that you could just tell players were thinking a little bit too much, not reacting and just flying around. And right now it feels like this defense is flying to the football. And part of it is due to some players that have, you know, an influx of talent, guys like Javon Bullard, Edgerrin Cooper, Xavier McKinney, of course. Like they definitely added some speed and some talent to this defense. But the way that Jeff Hafley has them playing is really, really fun to watch. And really a great example of that is Eric Wilson's impact. And we're joined by Paul Brattle right now, of course, from ESPN Lacrosse. Make sure to check him out over there every single day. He does an amazing job of covering the Green Bay Packers. But I know you talked specifically over on ESPN Lacrosse about Eric Wilson's impact and how maybe it's not always stuffing the stat sheet, but how they've been able to utilize him has been really impressive as well.
Yeah, Matt LaFleur talked about that on Monday. I mean, we saw the tackles for loss, we saw the blitzes, the sacks, the, like you said, the filling of the stat sheet. But I think equally as important to Wilson's play on Sunday, as Matt LaFleur mentioned, was that he stepped in when Quay Walker left, and he was the Mike linebacker. He's the signal caller. He was the quarterback for that Packers defense. And he did that, as LaFleur said, without any reps during the week in being that Mike linebacker, in filling that role. And that just all goes back to Eric Wilson's preparation. I mean, Matt LaFleur has said it, I think, a couple times this week. I know Jeff Hafley's talked about it previously, and it's the cliche, but it's true. He's a pro's pro. It goes back to his preparation, how he goes about his meetings, his going 100 miles an hour on the practice field, always finishing his reps. And you know, when the Packers drafted Cooper, they drafted Hopper early on in the NFL draft this past April. You know, at least from the outside looking in these early stages of the offseason programs and training camp, you have Walker already. You have Isaiah McDuffie, who was ahead of Wilson on the depth chart last year. And it looks like, you know, at that time that Wilson could end up as kind of the odd man out, at least from a defensive perspective. But again, it speaks to his mindset. Controlling the controllables, right? Going through his process each day, what he has to do to put himself in a position to be successful. And again, it's a studying of the playbook. It's how he handles himself in meetings. And LaFleur mentioned this yesterday as well. He has been more than willing to help out Cooper, to help out Hopper. I mean, I imagine it could be easy for any veteran to go out there and try to think, all right, I gotta, you know, make sure that I see the field as much as I can. But Wilson has said this since the two linebackers came in. You know, if they can make the team better, he wants them on the team. So he's there to help them, because he had mentioned when he was a rookie in Minnesota, he had gotten guidance from the veteran linebackers that were there, and that made a huge impact on him early on his career. So now he wants to do that and pass on the knowledge, the wisdom, the experience that he's gained throughout the years to Cooper, to Hopper, to those Packers rookies. And that's the kind of guy that you want on your football team, right? Someone who's going to go about their business the right way, someone who's going to help the younger players develop, help them evolve, and then someone, because of how he goes about his business, you can call on them at what feels like the drop of a hat to fill a role that he hasn't seen a ton of practice snaps in recently, and go out there and just provide a really steady, reliable presence that resulted in some playmaking as well. So I asked Kenny Clark about Eric Wilson after the game, and in short, Clark said, every team needs an Eric Wilson, again, because of all the qualities we just discussed that he brings to this team.
Yeah, one of the things Green Bay has done well over the years, and it hasn't always been perfect, but a lot of times it is the case. Maybe not the case right now at wide receiver and tight end-ish, but there's usually a veteran in one of each of the groups. You've got Xavier McKinney at safety. You've obviously got, you know, Jair Alexander, who's a veteran at corner. At linebacker, it is Eric Wilson, Kenny Clark along the defensive line, Preston Smith at defensive end. You know, you've got guys like Elton Jenkins on the offensive line, and then Josh Jacobs at running back, and I would consider Jordan basically a veteran at quarterback at this point. So you have one of these veterans type guys in each of the rooms, and I think having somebody like that does really help a lot. And then I was with you. I think you kind of saw a little bit of the potential writing on the wall in the offseason when they go out and they get these two rookie linebackers in the second and third round, and especially knowing Green Bay's propensity to, you know, keep younger guys, and they're the youngest team in the league. This is a player that's age 30. He's basically been a special teams kind of guy, and you're looking at him like, even if he makes the team, this is going to be a special teams dominant role. But yet here they find a way to utilize him on defense, and when Quay Walker goes down, he's the guy in the middle of a defense that is arguably their, you know, best performance of the year so far against Houston. So it was a huge game for Eric Wilson and how he was able to step up and play the way he did. Again, we're joined by Paul Bredel right now of ESPN Lacrosse. Paul, one of the things that I love about this show is that we get to nerd out about the, you know, stuff that maybe everyone else isn't talking about. I don't know how many people this week are going to be talking about John Fitzpatrick, Paul, but I know you wrote about John Fitzpatrick. This could be John Fitzpatrick's week. Of course, for those who don't know, John Fitzpatrick was picked up a couple weeks ago off of, I believe it was Atlanta's practice squad, correct, if I remember correctly?
Yep.
Atlanta's practice squad, and he will probably get the opportunity to be the number three tight end this week. Andrew Beck really held that role the last couple weeks. The guy they called up from the practice squad, he's no longer on the practice squad. They let him go this week. So it looks like it is going to be John Fitzpatrick's time to shine. So, Paul, what can he bring to the table as a number three tight end?
Yeah, absolutely. And Fitzpatrick was, I believe, a sixth-round pick by Atlanta in the 2022 draft, and the Packers had interest in him during that pre-draft process. They had him in that year as one of their top 30 visits. And during his time at Georgia, because, of course, he's a Georgia Bulldog, his primary role was utilized as a blocker. And then the limited playing time he's seen on offense at the NFL level, it's been as a blocker. So that's right now at this stage of his career. And again, he's listed at 6'7", 250 pounds. That's his bread and butter. In these early stages of his playing time with the Green Bay Packers, you're going to see him utilized as a blocker within this offense. And in terms of playing time, I think we can, you know, we got the blueprint in front of us, three games this season with Andrew Beck being a practice squad elevation, somewhere around that 10 snap mark. Someone, again, who's primarily going to be utilized as a blocker. But during his last season at Georgia, Fitzpatrick did average almost 14 yards per catch. I did ask Javon Bullard a couple weeks ago just about Fitzpatrick. They're college teammates. And, of course, he noted his blocking ability, but also talked about his well-rounded skill set. He's someone who's reliable in really all phases of the game in terms of what you would ask of your tight end. And knowing this Packers offense, knowing what LaFleur wants of that tight end position, I don't think they would have made this move had they not thought that there was some potential to help out in the passing game, right? And again, not to say he's going to overtake Tucker Kraft or go out there and have a handful of targets in some of these games, but he does bring that ability. So when we see Andrew Beck, I believe it was in the Arizona game where he's lined up in the slot, they're going to put him in space. They're going to line him up in line. He may get a target here or there, depending on where the ball's going, what the defense is dictating. But he brings a well-rounded skill set to his team. But as he gets going, as he gets accustomed to this offense, as the Packers learn, really, you know, his skill set, again, what does he do well? How do we utilize that? I think he's going to be more of a blocker for the time being. But as he gets more acclimated, I wouldn't be surprised to see him in space a little bit more or maybe have a target or two come his way during the game. Because I did ask Adam Stenovich last week, and it had only been a few practices where Fitzpatrick had been with the Packers. But Stenovich said that he looked good out there, and they're excited to get him involved into more aspects of the offense. So I think there's a little bit more there that can be untapped or tapped into than just the blocking component.
Yeah, I think so, too. He's a big physical target. Green Bay taking away the specialists. One out of every 10 Packers are former Georgia Bulldogs on the main roster right now. So he's the fifth of 50 non-special teams players on the team that went to Georgia, which is kind of crazy. And also, anytime you see Green Bay pick up a guy off another team's practice squad, like, don't just overlook it. Eric Wilson, Rasul Douglas, Alan Lazard, Bo Melton, Robert Rochelle, Tyler Davis, now John Fitzpatrick. Like, they have had some success pulling guys from opposing teams' practice squad. So we'll see if John Fitzpatrick can be the latest in that. All right, as we look ahead, Paul, to Packers, Jaguars, again, we're being joined by Paul Bredel of ESPN Lacrosse. Make sure to check him out over there every single day. As we get to Packers, Jaguars, what are some of the things that you're looking for that you could, you feel like could maybe swing the balance one way or the other, hopefully in Green Bay's favor?
Yeah, talking to Matt LaFleur, Jordan Love, Xavier McKinney on Wednesday, the sentiment amongst all of them was the same, that this is, don't be fooled by the Jaguars 2-5 record, particularly on the offensive side of the ball. That is a team that has a lot of firepower. We know the arm talent that Trevor Lawrence brings at quarterback, rookie receiver Brian Thomas. I believe he's 6th in among receivers this season in total receiving yards. He's averaging over 17 yards a catch. They just got tight end Evan Engram back in the mix 2 weeks ago. He had over 100 receptions last season, nearly eclipsed the 1,000-yard receiving mark. And McKinney even said, "You go, you know, I know he's listed as a tight end, but he's not a tight end. He's a receiver. The routes he can run, his ability as a pass catcher. So again, that's a really dynamic presence that the Jaguars are going to have from the slot, even from out wide at times. And then in the backfield, Tank Bigsby, been one of the best big play running backs in football this season, averaging over 6 yards per rush. Been really, really difficult to bring down. Among the leaders at the running back position in yards after contact and missed tackles for. So there is a lot of playmaking potential with this Jaguars offense. Now, of course, the struggle has been the consistency. While there's that ability to put up yards, to put up points quickly, they're also ranked towards the bottom of the NFL in time of possession. So what does that tell us? They're struggling to sustain drives. There's very much a boom or bust approach to this Jaguars offense where it's quick yards, quick points, or they're punting. It's a short possession. So I think where success starts for this Packers defense is stopping Tank Bigsby and that Jaguars running game. You slow the run game, now you're putting the offense in long down and distances, predictable passing situations. That big play ability that's there in the passing game, it loses some of its bite when it's 2nd and 9 or 3rd and 10, and the defense knows a pass play is coming. And just as we saw against the Cardinals, I think a big component to the Packers' ability to contain that explosive rushing offense was the complementary football. It was the offense jumping out to an early lead. And as the game goes on, makes it much more difficult if you're the Cardinals or the Jaguars to be able to lean on Bigsby, to be able to lean on that run game. And again, you get more predictable, you get more pass heavy. So I think that complementary football component is obviously going to be important. It is every week. But in terms of slowing the Jaguars run game, I think how the Packers offense starts can actually play a key role in that.
Yeah, I like a lot of what you brought up there, but the two big ones for me, you know, Brian Thomas Jr. and Tank Bigsby, those are two big young playmakers that have the propensity to beat you on any given play. I think if Green Bay can control those two, which is easier said than done, they're going to have a great opportunity to win. Packers already down to only 3.5-point favorites in this game, a very fishy line that I don't like one bit, but Paul, hopefully they can find a way to come up with the victory this Sunday, and now, of course, we'll be talking with you next week on the Pack-A-Day podcast, but in the meantime, tell us where we can find all of your incredible work, Paul.
I appreciate it as always, Andy. You can follow me on Twitter at Paul_Bredel. For all my writing work, head over to ESPNLacrosse.com.
Yeah, go look at it. It is so good. Paul does such an amazing job in the locker room, interviewing players, getting amazing stories. So you're going to want to make sure to check out ESPNLacrosse.com every single day. Paul, can't thank you enough. This, of course, is the Pack-A-Day radio show live from the 1250 AM and 105.7 FM, the Fan Studios, powered by the Potawatomi Sportsbook. Again, thank you to Paul Bredel. We will be right back right after this. Appreciate you guys joining us every single day, 5 days a week, the Pack-A-Day radio show. It has already been amazing. I cannot believe we are ending week two. Of course, we always want your questions. Feel free to get those in to the Nicolay Law fan line, 414-677-1250. course, you can always hit me up on Twitter if you have questions as well, which is exactly what we had happen with Newt Horton coming in with a great question of where does Luke Musgrave fit in the offense when he is healthy? So we don't know at this point when Luke Musgrave is going to be back. It did sound like it was going to be a little bit of a longer term injury where it wasn't just going to be those 4 weeks on IR and he would return after that. So sounds like maybe, you know, towards the end of the season, but there was hope that he would be back at some point. I still think Luke Musgrave has the potential to have a massive role in this offense. And listen, I think it's abundantly clear that Tucker Kraft is tight end one, and I don't think that situation is up for grabs anytime in the remainder of Tucker Kraft's time in Green Bay. Like, he is going to be the guy at that spot, and that's okay. That doesn't have to be anything against Luke Musgrave. I love Luke Musgrave. I think he's ultra talented, but it's just more of a compliment to what Tucker Kraft's been able to accomplish as both a pass catcher, run after the catch guy, and specifically as a blocker. So listen, Luke Musgrave might not be able to jump that spot and get to tight end one. That doesn't matter. Like, there's going to be a ton of opportunity for him to be tight end two. We know that Matt LaFleur wants to go to a lot of 11 personnel, which is two tight ends, and get both Musgrave and Kraft on the field at the same time. And I think Green Bay is only, you know, I should say even barely scratched the surface of what they can get out of Luke Musgrave. He should be somebody that can attack the seam. He should be somebody that can utilize in the red zone quite a bit. He is a target that you can scheme open, which we saw Matt LaFleur do a little bit last year and being able to get him into space. And of course, we had the, you know, unbelievable post game of like Musgrave stayed on his feet, which is amazing. There's a little bit of a propensity maybe to stumble once in a while from Luke Musgrave. That's legitimate, but there's still so much talent there. And as soon as he can kind of, I think, get back healthy and start getting into those two tight end sets, I still think that he can be a huge asset to this Packers offense. And even if you get into the situations where Tucker Kraft's banged up for a couple games or things like that, having somebody like Luke Musgrave who can be the guy at that tight end spot as a number two is huge. So I think they will continue to get him ingrained in this offense when he gets back. But the first thing for Luke is to just get back healthy and then find him in that, you know, find a role for him and kind of get him going, because there is so much talent there. Obviously, second round pick was picked ahead of Tucker Kraft last year, and Green Bay's got to find a way to untap all of that raw potential that is very clear and evident there for Luke Musgrave. And then JaxTrack3 on Twitter asks, who would you say is the next Packer to get a contract extension? This is a little bit more of an interesting question. If you look at the players that are potential, you know, unrestricted free agents, the two that kind of pop out to you are guys like Josh Myers and TJ Slayton. Now, TJ Slayton, if we're being honest, doesn't fit this defense perfectly. I think you kind of need somebody like Slayton as a little bit more of that bigger physical guy, run-stopping guy in certain situations, but we're seeing Slayton get under 20 snaps per game. I think TJ Slayton probably sees it and says, all right, I probably need to find a different defense that suits me a little bit better, that's going to give me an opportunity to have a little bit more playing time. And I think if TJ Slayton gets any sort of legitimate contract on the open market, Green Bay's probably more apt to say, yeah, it's probably not the most perfect fit. We're probably not going to give you top of the market, you know, free agent money for whatever you're expecting to get. And it's probably best that you're probably more likely to maybe get it somewhere else. So I think TJ Slayton's probably, you know, on his way out and probably gets a free agent deal elsewhere. It's not impossible he could be back by any means, but that's where I would lean right now. Josh Myers, I think Josh Myers is having legitimately the best season of his career so far. And I know we heard last year he's playing the best football, yada, yada. I never saw it. I did not feel like Josh Myers was playing well last year. I do believe he's playing much better this year. And I do believe this is the best we have seen Josh Myers. And whether that's contract year related, well, you can be the judge of that. Sometimes that tends to happen in the NFL. You get that contract year and all of a sudden a player plays out of their minds and gets that big contract the next year, which kudos to them. They absolutely deserve that. But I think with Green Bay, you know, you look at some of the free agent deals last year. You've got John Runyon Jr., right, who is the right guard for Green Bay. He goes and gets 10 mil per from the New York Giants. If you look at somebody like Lloyd Cushenberry, who went from Denver to Tennessee, a center, he got a little over, right around like 12.5 million per year. And like, I think it was like a 4-year, $50 million deal, something like that. That's, to me, what Josh Myers probably gets in free agency, somewhere between 10 to 12 million per year. I think probably 3 years, 35 million, 3 years, 36, somewhere in that range is probably what you're looking at for a Josh Myers in the open market. Do I think Green Bay, if you know the price was right, would like to have Myers back and have more depth on the offensive line and continue that, you know, sort of tag team and tandem of Josh Myers and Jordan Love, where they're making sure all the checks at the line are correct and everything like that? Yeah, but do I think that they're going to pay that much for him when they have options on the roster to replace him? I think probably not. You look at that offensive line, you have probably four guys who could potentially play center, right? Elton Jenkins can kick inside to center. Zach Tom could kick inside to center. Sean Ryan has played center. And you've got Jacob Monk, who can play center as well, who it's not infeasible that he could be ready by next year to be the guy at center. So I think they have options there. And I think because of that optionality, there's a good chance that they say, you know, we appreciate all your time in Green Bay. Go get that money elsewhere. And we've got kind of guys internally. Plus, they'll probably start, you know, restocking the cupboard a little bit during the draft next year, which just so happens to be in Green Bay. I think that maybe is not the most likely. And I'll say the same thing I said about TJ Slayton. Do I think there's a possibility he could be back? Absolutely. But I think it's maybe more likely he gets that bigger deal elsewhere. Another player of interest, Eric Stokes. Eric Stokes is down to about 8 snaps per game. And if we're being honest, I think there's an argument that those 8 snaps should probably be going to Carrington Valentine. They gave him an opportunity to be the guy at starter. He couldn't stick with it. He's had 2 injury-riddled seasons, so he's not been able to stay healthy. He hasn't lived up to expectations. They gave him every opportunity to be the starter this year, and he couldn't maintain it. I think probably the writing is on the wall there, too, where this is probably Eric Stokes' last season. So I'm more looking at, you know, so maybe some of the, I don't want to say fringe guys, because this, the player I'm about to name is very important, but somebody like a Daniel Whalen. If I'm Green Bay, I'm ready to sort of open up the checkbook and say, let's get you signed to a long-term contract. He's been an absolute weapon for Green Bay so far. And I think it's ridiculous and stupid and lame when people call punters weapons. Daniel Whalen's a weapon. He's been fantastic. So I have no issue with calling him that whatsoever with the way that he's able to flip the field. And then, of course, his clutch play to get that field goal, or to get the snap down last week for the game-winning field goal. He's been phenomenal. So that would be a player that I would potentially look to extend right now if I were Green Bay. I think it's probably a little bit early to start having the Zach Tom conversation, but he's going to get a long-term extension in Green Bay. That's just a matter of when, and when Green Bay wants to start having those conversations. So there's definitely players that you can look at right now and say, yeah, they're in line for an extension. But I'll say it. I don't think it would be shocking if it was actually Daniel Whalen, the punter, who is the next player to get that long-term extension. All right. What I want to talk about next, before we get to our Potawatomi Sportsbook final thought of the day, is this NFC North. The NFC North is absolutely insane. They are 19-6 already. And 2 of those losses, by the way, had to happen because it was Packers, Vikings, and Vikings, Lions. So they're what, 17-4 outside of the division. 17-4 is unbelievable. 19-6 right now, and they could very well be 23-6 after this weekend. Of course, tonight, you've got Vikings-Rams on Thursday Night Football. Should be a good one. Vikings are favored by 3 on the road in LA. Cooper Kupp coming back for the Rams should definitely help their offense. And we'll see if the Rams can maybe pull the upset there. But Vikings are favored by 3. Packers-Jacksonville, of course, on Sunday, noon. Packers favored by 3.5. I still don't like that line at all. It feels like it should be more around like 5, 5.5, maybe even 6. So really don't like what Vegas is cooking up there. But Packers still favored by 3.5 points. They could easily get the win there. The Lions favored by 11 at home over Tennessee, so they're expected to just absolutely trounce the Titans, who are already starting to trade away players like DeAndre Hopkins. And then the final game is Chicago taking on Washington in Washington, which normally would say, all right, Washington in Washington. I like that for Washington and probably beating Chicago, except Jaden Daniels, as of right now, probably not going to be playing in that game, and it certainly seems like Vegas feels that way as well, because the Bears are 3-point favorites over Washington this week. And unfortunately, we may not get that Jaden Daniels-Caleb Williams matchup, which would be really fun. But either way, you could be looking at a situation in which Chicago beats the Commanders. You could be, you know, in a situation where the Vikings beat the Rams, Packers beat Jacksonville, and Detroit beats Tennessee. They could be 23-6 after this week. That would be a 79% winning percentage. It's just unbelievable. And listen, this division will cannibalize itself at some point. You're going to get more matchups between the teams inside of it. You know, Chicago's wins have been fairly easy wins so far. You know, Green Bay finally got their signature one against Houston, and Minnesota and Detroit have been absolutely cooking, and Detroit looks phenomenal. Obviously, that Aiden Hutchinson injury is huge, and now they're without Jameson Williams as well. We'll get a look at Packers Lions next week, but if the season were to end today, all 4 NFC North teams would be in the playoffs. It would be an unbelievable situation. And, you know, it would be also crazy that 3 of those teams would have to go on the road in the opening round. And this is, to me, the best division in football. I don't think that's close. I don't think I'm breaking any news there to anyone. And I'll say it again. In my opinion, the NFC champion, the NFC team that represents the NFC in the Super Bowl, will be from the NFC North. I just don't see another team outside of Minnesota, Green Bay, or Detroit that is really kind of in that league right now. And I think the fact that these three teams are going to be iron sharpening iron, and I'll throw Chicago in there as well, where I don't think Chicago is going to be in that conversation for a big playoff push or a Super Bowl or anything like that, by no means. But Chicago is going to be a pain for these teams to play every single time. And Chicago's schedule, like, it is a brutal schedule for Chicago. But I will say this, Chicago is going to have an absolutely massive say and impact on the NFC standings through the remainder of this season. They've got Washington this week, who's one in the East, Arizona, and then New England. They're two easier games, but then they play the Packers, the Vikings, the Lions, the 49ers, the Vikings, the Lions, the Seahawks, and the Packers. That's their final eight games. So a brutal schedule for Chicago, but they are a pain to play, and which teams come out with losses against Chicago and which teams can pick up wins is going to massively alter the seeding in the NFC. All right, let's get to our Potawatomi Sportsbook final thought of the day, and that is, do not sweat the wide receiver numbers.
It's time for Andy Herman's final thought of the day.
What are you thinking?
Powered by the Potawatomi Sportsbook.
What the hell were you thinking?
You're listening to the Pack-A-Day Radio Show on 1250 AM and 105.7 FM, The Fan.
Forgot we have cool music for that. So as I was saying, before I forgot we had the music, the Potawatomi Sportsbook final thought of the day, don't sweat the wide receiver numbers. I see people freaking out of like, well, Christian Watson only had a couple targets, or, you know, how are they going to get Bo Melton involved? Or Dontavian Wicks was the fourth most snapped wide receiver this week. Or Romeo Doubs was in the doghouse for, like, do not sweat it. This is a long season. We knew this was going to happen. There are going to be weeks where certain wide receivers just don't get the targets that you would expect. This is why I told everyone to stay away from basically all these wide receivers, maybe sans Jaden Reed from a fantasy standpoint. Jaden Reed had an awesome start to the year. My guess is at some point, Jaden Reed goes through a little bit of a lull. And I guarantee you, Christian Watson's going to have breakout games. We saw Romeo Doubs the last 2 weeks step up big. So these wide receivers are all going to get theirs throughout the course of the year. Injuries, I'm sure, will happen, and different players will be targeted in different weeks. So I know everyone wants all these wide receivers to feast. It simply cannot happen with all the mouths to feed in this offense, and that's okay. Just don't sweat the wide receiver numbers. They're all going to get these opportunities throughout the course of the year. All right, that is going to do it for me today. Stay tuned for the Mason Crosby Show next with Mitch and Ellis coming up from 9 to 11 right here on The Fan. You, of course, can find the Pack-A-Day podcast 365 days a year wherever you get your favorite podcasts. We'll be right back here tomorrow with an all-new Pack-A-Day radio show with Andrew Mertag. You're not going to want to miss that. This has been the Pack-A-Day radio show live from the 1250 AM and 105.7 FM, The Fan Studios, powered by the Potawatomi Sportsbook. We'll see you guys tomorrow.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
America's favorite place to watch football is Stadium Swim, located at Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas. Catch all the biggest games at a viewing experience built for sports fans. Chill in one of their six pools on three different levels for a perfect view of their massive screen. Plenty of seating options from cozy day beds to private, temperature-controlled cabanas. Stadium Swim. Book your spot today at CircaLasVegas.com.